are the top stories. Israel says one of its cargo ships has been attacked in the Indian Ocean while en route to the United Arab Emirates. One Palestinian man is killed and two others injured by Israeli gunfire near the West Bank city of Nablus. Iran's foreign minister has denounced Washington's violence against his people on the anniversary of the U.S. shooting down of an Iranian airliner in 1988. Welcome to the program. Israel says one of its cargo ships has been attacked in the Indian Ocean while en route to the UAE. The ship was identified as Tyndall, a Liberian-flagged cargo ship which is under partial Israeli ownership. Israeli media say the vessel was possibly hit by a missile. Reports said the crew were not hurt and the ship was not badly damaged. Media reports cited Israeli sources who claim that Iran was behind the incident. In the past months, a number of Israeli ships have been targeted in waters around the world. The regime usually puts the blame for such incidents on Iran, but Tehran has vehemently rejected any involvement. Political commentator Kevin Barrett says, "It wouldn't be surprising if the attack on the Israeli vessel was a retaliatory one, considering recent Israeli acts of sabotage against Iran."
You know, we never really know what's happening with these kinds of incidents, because often the people behind them are doing deniable kind of operation. They can be false flag operations. They can be carried out by independent groups, or it could, of course, be part of an alleged ongoing tit-for-tat kind of thing in which Israel has actually been the aggressor, going after shipping related to Iran. And in particular, Israel is doing everything it can to try to prevent Syria from remaining part of the axis of resistance, because the Zionists are expansionists. They want to keep stealing territory. They want to keep the Golan Heights and grab more territory if they can. And as this strong axis of resistance emerges that's telling them, no, your days are numbered, they're panicking. And one of the things the Israelis have done is target Iranian ships. So it wouldn't be surprising if there were some Iranian retaliation, but we don't know if that's the case. Again, it could be independent groups, and it could even be a false flag, although I doubt this would be a false flag if we see the Israelis doing something that they really wanted to do anyway immediately thereafter, and then using this as an excuse. Then we might suspect that it's a false flag.
Palestinian man has been killed near the West Bank northern city of Nablus. Palestinian media say 21-year-old Mohammed Farid was shot dead by Israeli settlers in the village of Qasr. Reports say Farid was shot in the chest and later succumbed to his wounds at the hospital. Our correspondent Mona Kandil tells us more.
What happened this night is that Israeli settlers raided the village of Qusra, south Nablus, in north of the occupied West Bank. They clashed with the Palestinians living in the village of Qusra. Then they were hurling rocks and attacking people in their homes. The Palestinian youths left their homes in order to defend themselves and their homes, properties, and lands. The Israeli forces then raided the village of Qusra in order to protect the settlers. They opened fire at the Palestinians. According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, 21-year-old Mohammed Farid Hassan was on the roof of his home in Qusra when he was shot in the chest. He was taken by the Israeli forces with them. Then the Israeli forces said that he succumbed to his injuries while they arrested him and moved him to one of the hospitals. Two other Palestinians were also wounded during the clashes. Now, it's not clear whether those Palestinians were shot by the fire of the Israeli settlers or they were shot by the Israeli soldiers who were raiding the village in order to attack the Palestinians and, of course, to protect the settlers.
Israeli fighter jets have bombed two positions in the north of the Gaza Strip. Our correspondent in Gaza City, Ashraf Shanandat, has joined us earlier with the latest on the incident.
Israeli fighter jets attacked two security posts that belong to Hamas's military wing, the Nim Hassan Brigades, one south of Gaza City. I mean, I saw that with my own eyes. I was sitting on the roof of one of my friend's homes, and I saw the area lit up with like hellfire. The second attack happened in northern Gaza, and causing extensive damage to both sites and also surrounding areas. You have to understand that Gaza is around 360 square kilometers and has 2 million people, at least 2 million people living in it. Among them, nearly 60% are people people under the age of 18. So every time the Israeli regime fires a rocket or shoots a bullet towards the enclave, it's likely to hit, maim, or kill someone. We've been hearing witnesses in the areas of the second bombing in northern Gaza saying they think someone was seriously injured or possibly died because of the attack. But we're still waiting for the Ministry of Health to confirm such scenario if it happened.
Palestinians have slammed a top German official who claimed the International Criminal Court lacked jurisdiction to probe Israel's war crimes. Palestinians want the Israeli regime to be held accountable for its atrocities committed in the occupied territories.
German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier had said he strongly opposes an investigation into Israeli war crimes against Palestinians. He claimed that the International Criminal Court had no jurisdiction over the matter. He made the remarks in an interview with Haaretz earlier this week ahead of his visit to the occupied territories. His comments were slammed by Palestinian officials. The Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs described the German official's remarks as a departure from the rules of international law and an interference with the ICC's work and decisions. The ministry noted that Palestine is an active member of international institutions and therefore enjoys all rights and duties at the international level. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas also reacted to German officials' comments. Hamas spokesman Hazem Qasem said remarks represent a blatant bias in favor of Israel and against the Palestinian people.
Israel will sometimes help Germany, and of course it helps with Israel's colony, which is the U.S. The U.S. is basically a colony of Israel, and when Germany does what the U.S. wants, then it can get some favors in return. It pleases both the United States and Israel. That's it. Has nothing to do with justice. It has nothing to do with prosecuting criminals. They don't care that much about whether criminals get prosecuted. It's to their advantage.
The Hamas spokesman added that Steinmeier's position encourages the occupation to continue its crimes and aggression and places the Israeli regime above international law.
Well, the International Criminal Court has sought to expose war crimes committed by the Israeli regime and the U.S. around the world. Yet Israel has said it would not cooperate with the ICC investigation, putting aside violations in the occupied territories. Doesn't the 2014 Gaza war, in which over 2,000 Palestinians were killed, require an investigation?
Last year, former U.S. President Donald Trump's administration imposed sanctions on the ICC staff, targeting them with asset freezes and travel bans, accusing them of violating the U.S. national sovereignty by launching a probe into war crimes committed by the U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Former ICC Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda, who probed war crimes committed by Israel, the U.S. and their allies, said in December 2019 that such crimes had been or were being committed in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. She named the Israeli military, which has for years unleashed a reign of terror on Palestinians, as perpetrator of war crimes. Bensouda further noted that there was a reasonable basis to launch a probe into Israeli military actions in the besieged Gaza Strip, as well as illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. She then asked judges to rule on the extent of the court's jurisdiction in the case, and in February, the court established that it had jurisdiction.
Israel considers itself above international law. It wants everybody else to consider it above international law. It wants to be able to commit crimes against international law and not be held accountable for it. Crimes like genocide, like apartheid. And that's exactly what Germany's actions give Israel the opportunity to do. It says, go ahead, Israel, commit these crimes. We won't do anything about it. We will pat you on the back, and we won't cause you any problems with this. Go ahead.
It's now up to the new ICC chief prosecutor, Kaim Khan, to pick up where his predecessor left off.
Iran's foreign minister has denounced Washington's violence against his people on the anniversary of the U.S. shooting down of an Iranian airliner in 1988. Mohammad Javad Zarif wrote in a tweet that as a young diplomat, he witnessed the U.S. refusal to apologize over what he described as the human tragedy caused by Washington. Zarif noted that the U.S. violence against his country began long before, and it continues today with Washington's, quote, economic terrorism against the Iranian nation.
This ceremony in the Iranian city of Qom marks the end of a week-long occasion known as the U.S. Human Rights Week. The annual event commemorates a series of tragic incidents that killed hundreds of Iranians. The last day of the week, which falls on July the 3rd, marks the 1988 shooting down of an Iranian airliner by the U.S. Navy, which killed all of the 290 people on board. After more than three decades, Iran is still waiting for an apology from the U.S.
It was not an apology. You remember that even they gave a medal to the person who shut down innocent people. 100% was an inhuman and a terrorist act. And you see that these kinds of activities don't fade off during the time. They must answer. We need a court, international court, talk about it. And after not 100 years, 200, our next generation will never forget it, and they should be accountable for this accident, this terrorist accident.
The American Human Rights Week also commemorates the 1981 bombing of the headquarters of Iran's Islamic Republic Party, carried out by the formidable Mojahedin-e-Khalq terrorist organization, known as the MKO. 73 leading officials, including the then Justice Chief Ayatollah Mohammad Beheshti, were killed in the terror attack. In 2012, the U.S. and Europe delisted the MKO as a terrorist entity, and since then, they have been holding regular meetings with the terror group, which is now based in France and Albania.
The United States and its Western allies have a selective approach toward the issue of human rights. They do not consider the MKO a terror organization, because the MKO serves their interests, no matter how many innocent lives it has taken in Iran. On the other hand, they call the resistance axis a terrorist entity because the resistance has stood against their expansionist agenda in the region.
The 1987 chemical bombardment of Iran's city of Sardasht is another incident that falls in the same period on the Iranian calendar. Iraq's chemical weapons were reportedly produced using materials supplied by the U.S. and other Western countries. The 1981 attempted assassination of the then Iranian president Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei by the MKO is also among the incidents that's marked in the American Human Rights Week.
Iran says the U.S. footprints can be traced in all of the incidents that fall in this fateful week. Activists here say Washington has so far shrugged off its crimes in Iran. And that is why Iran marks the American Human Rights Week every year to present documented instances of gross violations of human rights by the U.S., at least in Iran. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Qom.
Russia reports nearly 700 new COVID-19 deaths, setting a nationwide record for the fifth consecutive day. The country's coronavirus task force also confirmed over 25,000 new coronavirus cases, the nation's highest figure since January. Russian officials blame the surge on the highly contagious Delta variant. In Indonesia, authorities declared a partial lockdown as the country logged nearly 28,000 infections. The figure marks the highest daily rise in cases since the start of the pandemic there. Meanwhile, South Africa announced 26,000 cases, its second record-breaking figure in as many days. The Delta variant has been detected in at least 98 countries, sparking new waves of infections. Cybersecurity firm Huntress, or Huntress Labs, has revealed that a ransomware attack on a U.S. IT company potentially targeted 1,000 businesses. Huntress Labs says the massive operation was launched hours before the U.S. Independence Day holiday weekend. It says the attack targeted a software supplier called Kaseya in the state of Florida. The hack then spread through corporate networks using the software. Kaseya describes itself as a leading provider of IT and security management services to small and medium-sized businesses. Ransomware attacks typically involve locking away data in systems using encryption, making companies pay to regain access.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsetodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsetodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
While many rich nations continue to ease public health guidelines as they gradually move in the direction of normalcy, an ultra-contagious COVID-19 mutation known as the Delta variant is spreading like wildfire in certain countries, says Jake Johnson Ryder in an article published under the heading Ultra-contagious COVID Delta variant, wreaking havoc worldwide. Stay tuned for more. In Bangladesh, troops are preparing to patrol the streets to enforce newly imposed stay-at-home orders. Australia, recently heralded as a pandemic success story, is returning to strict lockdowns. Scotland is seeing a record-breaking surge in new coronavirus infections. Indonesia is teetering on the edge of a public health catastrophe. While many rich nations continue to ease public health guidelines as they gradually move in the direction of normalcy, an ultra-contagious COVID-19 mutation known as the Delta variant is spreading like wildfire in countries that have struggled to vaccinate their populations and in communities that have refused to participate in inoculation drives, forcing governments to resort to drastic measures to contain the damage. The new curbs on travel and daily life stretch from Australia and Bangladesh to South Africa and Germany. But authorities over the weekend set new limits on travelers from virus variant zones such as Portugal and Russia, the Washington Post reported recently. South Africa extended a nightly curfew and introduced a ban on gatherings, sales, indoor dinings, and some domestic travel for 14 days to halt a worrying surge in cases driven by the Delta variant. First detected in India, the Delta variant is rapidly emerging as the dominant coronavirus strain across the globe. The mutation, which is estimated to be 60% more transmissible than the highly contagious Alpha variant, has now been detected in more than 80 countries, and it accounts for over a third of all new cases in the United States. The Delta strain is the most contagious variant we've seen so far, said Dr. Ashish Juha, the dean of Brown University School of Public Health, adding, "It is wreaking havoc around the world and will cause problems here," referring to the United States. While the spread of Delta poses a particularly severe threat to Africa, South America, and other regions without adequate access to vaccines, the variant also puts at risk rich countries that continue to stand in the way of a patent waiver aimed at boosting the global vaccine supply. As the Financial Times reported recently, the rising number of cases have raised concerns that the Delta variant could halt the progress the EU has made over the past 2 months in driving down coronavirus infections and deaths. The leadership of the European Union, along with Canada and the UK, has been among the principal opponents of the proposed vaccine patent waiver, which would temporarily suspend global intellectual property rules that are barring manufacturers from producing generic vaccines. Experts estimate that around 11 billion doses are needed to vaccinate 70% of the global population. The EU's opposition to the TRIPS waiver is no longer a Europe-only topic, said John Whittle, senior policy advisor at Health Action International, adding, "It has become an issue of global concern as the need for a waiver to diversify and scale up production is more pressing than ever." Just over a month after classifying Delta as a variant of concern, World Health Organization officials stressed recently that the mutation has the potential to be more deadly than other strains because it's more efficient in the way it transmits between humans. Dr. Mike Ryan, executive director of the WHO's Health Emergencies Program, warned during a press conference that the variant will eventually find those vulnerable individuals who will become severely ill, have to be hospitalized, and potentially die. To stem the spread of the Delta variant, the WHO recommended even fully vaccinated people should continue to wear masks and take other coronavirus-related precautions. Advice that conflicts with the U.S. Center for Disease Control's recent relaxation of mask guidelines for inoculated individuals. Vaccine alone won't stop community transmission, said Dr. Mariangela Simo, WHO's Assistant Director General for Access to Medicines and Health Products. People need to continue to use masks consistently, be in ventilated spaces, hand hygiene, the physical distance, avoid crowding. This still continues to be extremely important, even if you are vaccinated, when you have a community transmission ongoing. Public health experts have long feared that leaving vast swathes of the world without access to vaccines risks allowing vaccine-resistant variants to emerge, a nightmare scenario that would mean a prolonged pandemic and more avoidable deaths. As Nature's Evan Calloway reported recently, Delta is moderately resistant to vaccines, particularly in people who have received just a single dose. In the U.S., local governments are beginning to take action to prevent outbreaks amid growing concerns that Delta cases are on track to explode across the country. The Los Angeles County Department of Public Health advised that residents, including those who have been fully vaccinated, wear masks while indoor public spaces. Until we better understand how and to who the Delta variant is spreading, everyone should focus on maximum protection with minimum interruption to routine as all businesses operate without other restrictions like physical distancing and capacity limits, county officials said in a statement. Dr. Eric Figelding, a senior fellow at the Federation of American Scientists, warned recently that the U.S. is just several weeks away from experiencing a Delta surge similar to the U.K.'s, which was accompanied by a rise in hospitalizations and deaths. According to the latest data, less than half of the U.S. population is fully vaccinated, meaning large segments of the country are potentially vulnerable to the strain. As Common Dreams reported recently, Missouri communities that have either declined to get vaccinated or struggle to gain access to shots are quickly becoming U.S. hotspots for the Delta variant. We have seen this movie before elsewhere. The Delta variant creeps from the underbelly of falling cases of other variants, overtakes all variants, and then causes a surge, said Figelding, adding, don't let this happen where you are.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends. For your information, when a person asks Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him, as to who are the best servants of God, the Holy Prophet's eighth infallible heir replied, those persons who, when they perform a good deed, become glad. When they commit a bad deed, they ask the forgiveness of Allah. When they are granted, they thank for it. When they are afflicted and grieved, they exercise patience. And when they get angry, they forgive the faults of others. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This man changed the world.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. In the name of Allah, the exalted, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This is a program dedicated to the memory of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, and it's about his life and times and the impact this man made on not only the Muslim world, but the entire globe as a whole. Once again, I'm your host on this program, Ijaz Hussain, and I'd like to bring in Dr. Mahdi Turabi, my good friend, on this subject, and I'd like to say salam to him and welcome him to the program.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much again. Dr. Mahdi Turabi, we spoke at length about, the impact that Imam Khomeini made, as you said, on a pretty materialistic, secular world in which religion was marginalized, and how Imam, by living Islam, made an enormous impact on reviving and putting religion back on the world map. But now we want to move on a bit more, because I remember, as you will as well, that Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah, the first thing I remember about him was his call for unity. And he would say that it is perfectly permissible to go to Sunni mosques and pray behind a Sunni prayer imam and so on and so forth, so that we could foster fraternity, unity, in the spirit that our Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, used to do right at the beginning and the outset of Islam, to bring brotherhood and genuine friendship amongst each other, so that with this unity we would become powerful in this world. Your take on that, Dr. Mahdi Turabi?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's exactly as you said it, which is that, the only ones that benefit from, us fighting, Sunni Shia fighting, are the enemies of Islam. It's not really that complicated.
No, it's not.
The things that we have differences on, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But, the majority of things we don't have differences on.
And the other thing was that we were asked...
You focus on that, and you talk about the other things. And you do it in a peaceful way, and you do it as you would with your brother, in the sense that you love each other and you... you know, take care of each other and you help each other.
Yes.
And the difference is you try to work out with each other.
Well, the other thing was, Dr. Madita, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the other thing is that as far as what I remember, the message was that there was no need for a Shia to be a Sunni or a Sunni to be a Shia. The main thing was that we, respect each other's beliefs, respect each other's points of view, but the main thing is that we are united in terms of our purpose in living Islam, creating this Islamic civilization and, presenting an alternative to the rest of the world that is sinking in social ills and corruption and all kinds of deviance, which, Islam purifies us from.
Exactly. Yeah. And look at our history. I mean,
yeah.
the reason that, they were able to come and take over the Muslim world is because we were divided. I mean, it's simple.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult.
No, it's not. It's not rocket science, as they say.
It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
Okay. When we were divided, they were united. They took over.
Exactly.
Wassalam.
Okay. Wassalam. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
I could see that even now. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're still doing it.
Yeah.
And the reason they like having Al Saud be the guardians of Mecca and Medina is because, and the Takfiris, is because that's going to lead,
to more division.
That helps them. That helps them. Control of the Muslim world.
Exactly.
And if you get rid of Al Saud and the Takfiris, that's it.
Absolutely.
How much better would that be for the Muslims, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because this is the main source of contention at the moment, the main root cause of.
And remember, the Takfiris are not Sunni.
No, they're not. No, no.
The Takfiris are neither Sunni nor Shia.
No,
they're Takfiris.
They're enemies. They're the enemies. They're hypocrites that the Quran speaks about.
They're the ones that are doing the bidding of the Zionists in America.
Exactly, exactly.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, why are you so, when are you going to get it?
Absolutely.
I almost said it.
Why are you going to get it? Because, I mean, it's in the words of Netanyahu himself. He says Saudi is the last line of defense for this illegitimate state of Israel.
I'm just saying, to all Muslims, Sunni, Shia, young, old, brothers and sisters.
Sure.
It's so clear to everyone now what's going on.
Exactly.
Whatever, 30 years ago, whatever. Okay? Isn't it clear now who's with who gets money from who is, giving money to cannibals and organ eaters and who is...
Yes, Vladimir Putin, who said, yes, I'm not going to support organ eaters. I don't want my kidney to be cooked by a takfiri.
It's time to step up. And
exactly.
I'm talking, mainly the Sunni brothers and sisters. You see the realities. Why are you still stuck? Why are you still worried about? Why are you still confused? Why are you confused? Look at what happened to Ikhwan.
Yes.
They trusted. They went with the Saudis. They went with the Americans. They got burned. This is mainly, addressed to the Sunni brothers and sisters.
Yes, absolutely.
Look at what has happened in the last year.
Yes. Particularly in Egypt, yes.
Egypt, in Turkey, and all those places where the so-called,
Brotherhood.
The mainstream, moderate, the proper, Islamic movements, the minute they aligned themselves with the Saudis and with the Israelis and the Americans, they got burnt.
They got burnt,
They got stabbed in the back.
Exactly. And Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, was warning against this kind of thing, wasn't he? He was telling them...
Why are you still having such problems with Shias?
Exactly.
What's your problem?
Yeah.
Who's been talking about unity since, 40 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's been supporting, Sunni resistance movements like Hamas?
Like Hamas in Palestine, yes, absolutely.
Right? Who is the one that's, supporting, getting support from Israel?
Exactly.
And getting support from America and getting support from the Saudis. The Saudis, Morsi comes to power, Saudis give him a couple billion in order to buy him off.
Yes.
The minute he's overthrown, the first person congratulating, the military in Egypt is Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
General
Sisi got a pat in the back there. Yes, absolutely.
You want Al Saud to be your leaders? Is that the kind of leaders you want? Forget about Sunni Shia.
Yeah.
Is that who you want to be your leader? Or do you want somebody who's been talking about unity, who's been doing, who's been acting it, who's been
living it,
who's been acting, living on it.
Living on it.
for the last 34 years.
Exactly.
Who was able to become independent from their, you know, previous imperial master, who is, you know, everybody's educated, everybody's participating in the elections, everybody's, you know, has a future. And yes, there are difficulties, of course, there's sanctions, there's things that all so-called developing countries are going through, but where would you rather be today?
Yes.
Where is
That's
the
a very good question. Very
where
good
is the
question.
Future today?
Yes.
Right?
Quite.
So now you have a generation of youth in the Muslim world who are either faced with becoming Takfiris or, you know, becoming westernized, you know, servants of America and Israel. That's it. These are the two options they're giving you.
My God, they're both ugly. No, you know, not a choice I'd like to make. Not a
right,
choice I'd
is,
like to make.
This is the way. And, you know, either way, you're abandoning your religion.
Of course you are.
Right?
Of course you are.
Either way, you're going against the precepts of your religion.
Yeah, exactly.
Against the Quran, against the Sunnah.
Yes, sir.
If you become the servants of non-Muslims, you're going against it. If you become Takfiri and, you know, organ-eating cannibals,
yep.
you know,
yep.
you're going against your religion. So
sure.
they're basically saying to you, you got to give up your religion. So why do you have a problem with Imam now still?
Exactly. That's a very good question. It's a very good point.
Didn't Imam show a successful way of being able to maintain your religion?
Sure.
And maintain your
and the other thing I wanted to raise, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi,
and
was...
And maintain your servitude to God and to maintain your
yeah.
allegiance to the Prophet, peace be upon him, without having to become a servant, without having to become a crazy...
A slave.
You know, lunatic.
Yeah, a lunatic, a slave and a
an
lunatic.
Organ eater.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that
yeah.
good? Isn't
yes.
that a way to go? Isn't that maybe an option you should start considering?
Well, I must admit and I must confess, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, that Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, you know, he began the whole process of Unity Week. You know, he came up with this Unity Week, this conference by which we could all come together on the birthday of the Holy Prophet. Doesn't matter about the differences of what we understand
well,
historically.
I mean,
that was the genius of the whole
thing.
Instead of turning it into a
point of contention,
yeah.
he said, okay, one riwayat, one hadith is this day, the other one is the other one. So
yeah.
we'll have the whole week.
We'll have the whole week to celebrate the Holy Prophet's
we'll
birthday.
We'll celebrate the whole week. You know,
why not?
It's a week apart or
why
whatever,
not?
A couple
we,
days
we,
apart.
We get 2 weeks for Christmas, don't we?
Right. So
yeah.
then you have what's day, you know, which is the final
yes.
Friday of Ramadan.
That's right,
you know?
Yes.
I mean, excuse me, are the Palestinians Shia? Is that the reason why we support
no,
them?
No, no, I don't think they are, as far as
right.
I remember.
I mean, who supported the Palestinians more than the Imam and his movement? And
that's
his
right.
Republic?
That's
which
right.
Country? Who's paid more for this stance in the international era than Iran?
Absolutely.
So why are you still stuck with this? Why are you still following people like Ali Saud and these, you know, ignorant people who claim to follow Islam, but they're just servants of the non-Muslims? When are you going to wake up? When are you going to finally get it? Look at what happened to Morsi. Where is Morsi today? The first democratically civilian elected president of Egypt.
That's right.
Just think about that.
Yeah.
Why? Because instead of going and becoming close with those people who were supporting you for 40 years, when everybody else, when you know, you remember at the beginning in the 80s,
yes.
who was supporting Ikhwan in Egypt when they were all being sent to prison and being executed?
It was Iran.
Right.
It was the Islamic
okay.
Revolution.
Right. And so what happens? So instead of going and, you know, sticking with the one that's proven itself to be the real deal.
The real deal, McCoy, that's right, yes.
The real McCoy.
The
right?
real McCoy, the voice
you
of
go,
the voiceless.
You go, you know, mm. trying to satisfy the Saudis and, you know, calling Shias najis and, you know, whatever.
Or whatever,
they were
yes.
that time.
That's right.
You know, talking about the way they did about Hezbollah in Syria and whatever and all that stuff. And what's the result?
Well, there we are. I think that
you know your own defense minister does a coup d'etat.
Yeah.
And, you know, now you got the Europeans and the American envoys coming and telling you, well, you know, just accept reality. Let's
yes.
move on.
Let's move on. Yes.
You know.
Yeah. And
so I think you know the more we progress in history, the longer we are around and we see the things as they are happening, the more we realize that from the very, very beginning, Imam had gotten it right all the way.
All the way, he was. I mean, this is the miracle, isn't it? I mean, this is the genius of it all that just shows the, you know, some kind of divine quality that of the Imam that he.
Well, if you're connected, you're connected,
yeah.
and it's not anything mysterious. You have to be careful of the way you said it. People might think there's some sort of we're trying to. There's nothing mysterious about it. This is the normal way that Allah works.
This is the normal way that Allah works. You're quite right, sir.
I
stand corrected.
Yes. Yes. You have to be careful the way you talk about these things because this is exactly the things they use against us.
Yes.
When you read the Quran, this is a normal cause and effect.
Normal cause and effect.
Trust me, I will take care of you.
Quite.
This is not a miracle. It's a normal way that Allah does things.
Yes.
He says, I'm your wali. What does that mean? Not Tawhut, not, you know, others are your wali. When you trust in Allah the way Imam did, you will be successful.
You will be successful, absolutely.
More than that, we even have the ayat in the Quran, which all the Mufassirin, Sunni and Shia, say that refer to Imam Ali alayhi salam. And they talk about being the ones that are successful and being the ones that are the party of God and
the
ones that will be, you know, the ones that are in this world, successful in this world and in the next.
That's right.
So why don't you follow the Quran? Forget about the Hadith right now. We're not talking about Hadith.
No, we're talking about Quran, yes.
I'm sorry, because you are Mr. Hadith, so I apologize.
No, the Hadith is always secondary. It's a secondary source. The primary source is the Quran.
Imam is following Imam when he talked about what he did in terms of how we should live our Islam and how we should be active politically.
Yes.
He was talking Quran.
He was talking Quran. Very nice. That's very beautiful. That's very beautiful.
So why don't you follow Quran?
Why don't you follow
Quran? Following...
because you said the Quran was kafi, wasn't it? It said that the Quran was enough. And the Imam proved that the Quran is enough if you follow it.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that when you follow Imam Khomeini, you're following the Quran.
You're following the Quran, absolutely.
It's not about Sunni Shia.
No, it's not.
Why was Imam successful? Why was the Islamic Republic successful?
Yes.
Why is the Islamic Republic successful? Why do we have great leaders like Rahbat, like the supreme leader that we have?
Yes.
And he's a great leader. I mean, look at him. I mean, I'm talking about just, you know, as a Muslim, looking at somebody as a religious scholar, as a political leader.
Yes.
Who is guiding us.
Yes.
Isn't it great? You know, thank God we have somebody like him.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, and this is not about, you know, hero worship. This is about thanking God for, you know, putting the appropriate leaders for us.
Exactly.
Before there was Imam.
Yes.
And, you know, and the reason these people are good leaders is because they follow Islam. They follow the Quran. They follow the school of Ahlul Bayt, the Islam that is taught by Ahlul Bayt. And God says that if you do this, you will be successful.
You'll get good governance.
You won't be oppressed. You won't be, you know, 1 minute the president, the next minute in jail.
In jail, yes. I mean, this is what we can say about the beautiful scene that we saw just very recently with Dr. Rouhani's inauguration as president, that how smoothly things were transferred. It came with a kiss from the supreme leader. You don't get kissed often as a president, do you?
Again, let's make it real for a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the speech at that time, what was the main point that the supreme leader talked about?
Sure.
He said, it is a great blessing that the transfer of government in our country is done peacefully.
It's done peacefully, absolutely. Absolutely.
He said, this is one of the greatest blessings.
This is a great thing, absolutely.
And then he said, look at Egypt. Look at all the other countries.
Yes, he did. He did compare it. Of course he compared it.
So look at us. Mm. We followed Imam. Imam was following the Quran and the school of Ahlul Bayt, which is Faqalain.
Yes.
Quran and Ahlul Bayt, which is goes back to what the Prophet said.
Yes.
The Prophet, peace be upon him, said, I will leave you two weighty matters. I will leave with you two weighty things.
Sure.
The Quran and my Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
And if you follow them, you will be successful. So why don't you follow them?
No, that's a very good question. It's a very good question to our audience.
Why are you going after people and things that have no value to you?
Who
will lead you to Zulamat?
Yes, and will lead you astray. Yeah.
They will lead you to darkness.
Darkness.
Look at what happened to Morsi. Make it a lesson for yourself. Look at these poor guys in Turkey, in Ankara.
Absolutely.
They don't know what to do now. They're completely stuck in it.
There's the same problem in Tunisia. I mean, this is widespread, you know. I mean, Libya is in absolute chaos. I mean, what can you say?
You know, so this is the thing. Mm. When Imam came, there were, you know, the humanity, and especially the Muslims, were thirsting and were completely in need of guidance.
Yes.
The guidance, that's the real guidance. If you're going to have, to go back to our example that we used in the previous program.
Yes.
If you have the computer and then you put the wrong
software in it, it's
not going to work.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
You might even have it working for a while, but then there's so many bugs in it and there's so many problems with it that eventually it crashes.
It crashes. Very good.
Good. Are we now talking, you know?
I think so. It's the same language. I
You get it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's a very good paradigm. It's a very good model to express
the
idea.
It might work for a while. It's like, you know, it's okay. Should we go further on this? It's like Apple versus Windows. Okay.
I mean.
Okay.
Yeah, chalk and cheese.
You know, you're going to have certain operating systems. They might work for a while, but they've got so many bugs and problems in them, they're going to crash after a while.
Well, they're going to crash, exactly.
Some of them don't even work to begin with. Mm. Others, they work for a while and they crash. What you want is you want the one that doesn't have the bugs in it.
That's right. It's got the antivirus in it, you know. It's.
It doesn't even need the antivirus.
Virus.
Beyond all this stuff.
Very good point, yes. It doesn't even need the antivirus. You're absolutely right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, when you're a Muslim and you have a person like Imam coming and living at approximately the same time you did, right? You have no excuse on the Day of Judgment then.
No.
You can't say to Allah, I didn't know. He said, why? You didn't know? Well, there was Imam. He was on every channel on TV.
That's a very good point, yeah.
Right?
I mean, I watched him on News at 10, you know, on ITN in the UK, so I don't have much of an excuse either,
right.
You know.
You know, 50,000 websites, you know.
Yeah.
Hundreds of books, you know.
It's true.
What's your excuse on the Day of Judgment? I didn't know. Of course you knew.
Of course you knew.
You knew, not only knew because of the Quran and the Rivayat that were, you know, available to you, but more than that, it's you had somebody who, you know, is an Islamic scholar.
Yes.
Who is a practicing, you know, Muslim, who is a political leader, telling you.
Yes.
So, alhamdulillah, those of us who were, you know, fortunate enough to have been living in his time, you know, alhamdulillah, because he really taught us real Islam.
Sure.
Because who knows where we would be without him?
Oh my goodness! I think the tyranny of the Shah would still be continuing to this day.
You know what's even worse than that? We would be caricatures of Muslims.
You would be. That's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely
and you too,
true.
By the way.
I know. I wouldn't be here for a start. I mean, where would Scottish independence be? You know, I don't think anything would have happened.
Well, I'm trying to simply say that even if you were Muslim, which is, inshallah, we would all be,
inshallah.
But we would be very, you know, it would be a caricature. It would be a very kind
I don't know. Maybe I would have been in another
faith. A weak version of it, you know.
Yes.
We have this thing. I mean, Imam comes and tells us, look, if you want to do Islam, it's all of it. It's holistic.
It's holistic.
It's a complete package. It's a full program.
Full program, yep.
It's, you know, it's your night prayers and it's, you know, your political activity during the day. This is also what Supreme Leader talked about. We talked about that in the previous program.
That's right.
That, you know, he would pray at night and beg for mercy from Allah and you know, have that kind of
faith and trust
with
in
God,
Allah,
which is what you want.
Yes,
that you know you have nothing and you have to get everything from Allah.
Get everything from Allah. Yes, absolutely.
And during the day, you would, you know, come out like a, you know, lion and be a champion of the Muslims and be the one that
and the champion
of the
oppressed. Yes, absolutely.
Of all the oppressed.
Absolutely.
So this is what Islam is. It's not just, you know, praying and fasting. It's more than that. It's good. You pray, you fast. That's the basis of it.
That's the basis of it, yes.
Right. So, again, nobody should misunderstand what we're saying. We're not saying you shouldn't.
No, we're not saying that. No, this is the basis of it.
We're saying that's the minimum.
That's the minimum, yeah.
you know?
That's the minimum, absolutely.
And I'm not claiming that I'm any better than anyone or that I do more than all that.
No.
I'm doing the minimum as well. But that's the minimum. Don't think that that's the maximum. That's not the maximum. That's just the beginning.
That's just the beginning, yes.
The maximum, or close to the maximum, is what you see with a person like Imam.
Imam
the real maximum is what you see
Rahmatullahi
with the
absolutely.
Upon him,
may God bless
and
him.
And with the Imam,
sure.
Right?
So because it's all about us trying to become to achieve some kind of perfection and salvation in this world. And Imam Khomeini, may God bless him, gave us a living example of what that could be in this century.
Right.
And beyond.
You're right. And it's not just this kind of, you know, parochial, you know. I mean, it really, I think about it and it really upsets me to think about that they would turn Islam into this kind of very, you know, unimportant thing of like, oh, just, you know, the way you clean yourself and the way you pray and like that's it. Allah, all the 125,000 prophets because of that, you know.
My God.
All the wars, all the struggles, you know, all the struggles of the Prophet, peace be upon him, all the struggles of the Imam, you know, Shahadat, you know, Karbala, Ashura, because of that.
No, it's ridiculous.
Is that it? I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It's a ridiculous notion that this would be Islam. It's a ridiculous notion that Islam wouldn't be political. It's a ridiculous notion.
Absolutely.
It's not even worth discussing.
No.
You know, this is the problem
it's a very serious point. You know, this is something that really our listeners
problem.
Must
for
take.
For 34 years, we're trying to explain to the Muslims themselves that no, really, Islam is political. It's not even worth discussing. It's not even, of course it's political.
It's not even, it should be something second nature to you.
Of course it's political.
Yeah.
Of course it has to do with society. Of course it has to do with helping the poor. Of course it has to do with helping the oppressed.
Yeah. And establishing an Islamic civilization, a system.
Exactly.
A system by which we live
and
die.
And establishing Islamic governments is just the first step for that.
Yes.
The next step is, and the ultimate goal is Islamic civilization.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, and we're not the ones that are imperialist and wanting to impose it on all of humanity, because that's what's going to happen when we have Zuhur.
Yes.
In terms of, that's not our job. Our job is not to impose things on anyone.
No.
Okay?
No.
I don't even know what's going to happen after Zuhur, but that's not even my concern right now.
No, no.
Zuhur is going to happen, and you know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
That's that. But at this moment in time, we're concentrating,
at
as you say, on getting
exactly.
the foundations in place.
At this moment in time, our goal is to build a strong, powerful, you know, enlightened, conscious, you know, ethical, moral Islamic civilization. All
sure.
of us.
Sure. Sure.
All
absolutely.
Of
all
us.
Of us.
Every part of
Sunni,
of
Shia, everybody. Everybody's
you know,
involved in this.
Those living in the Muslim majority.
Yeah, this is a big
Africa,
project.
Asia, you know, wherever.
Yeah.
Those living in non-Muslim countries who, you know, consider their primary existential reality and identity as being Muslim and not other things.
Sure.
Or those other things as being, you know, secondary to that. You know, that's your job right now. That's our job right now.
Absolutely.
We have to build Islamic civilization, and it has to be a beautiful one. And it can't be the Takfiri, you know, organ-eating one.
No,
and
it can't
be.
No, no. I don't fancy eating anybody else's liver right now. Yeah.
And it can't be the Turkish, Jordanian, you know, slaves and servants of America and Israel. Okay?
Yeah.
You get it?
Yes,
you see where
absolutely.
I'm going with this?
I'm going along with this.
It can't be the Al Saud, you know, authoritarian dictatorship, you know, passing it from one brother to the next, you know.
No, no. I mean, these are tyrannies. You know, these are tyrannies. These can't be Islamic. No, I mean, these are tyrannies. They've got to be got rid of. This has got to go in the past. It's got to go into the dustbin of history.
What it is that beautiful Islam has. Imam taught us,
yes.
as the supreme leader has
God
been teaching us for these years, of how to stay on the Sirat al-Mustaqim.
Yes,
not
on the path of
becoming,
righteousness.
You know,
yes.
extreme on the left, not becoming extreme on the right.
No, no.
Right?
Absolutely.
Focusing on knowledge, focusing on education,
wisdom.
Focusing on wisdom, focusing on, you know, building societies.
Absolutely.
Focusing on all these things that we see that this is what, you know, beauty is something that is fitra. Again, it goes back to fitra.
Yes.
You know, human beings recognize beauty immediately. Mm. You don't have to explain it.
No, you don't. No, this is something
okay.
in part of their fitra.
Mm. When you look at a society like Iran, which went from being a, you know, feudalistic society, majority illiterate, you know, 50 years ago, to a society where the youth are all, you know, capable and educated and, you know, on the forefront of all these different things, who are conscious, who understand the world, I mean, isn't this beautiful? Isn't this what you want for your children?
Exactly. Dr. Maddy Tarabi, I'm afraid once again, you know, time is against us, but, you know, we've run out of time on the program. But thank you very much indeed for that enlightening contribution to, you know, the life and times.